Welcome to the game.
It's a beautiful thing.
With Mark Duffield.
By golly gosh.
The son of a darkened shearer and a self-described ball-playing jack-of-all-trades.
We shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Who lit up footy fields in the southwest before becoming WA's preeminent AFL scribe.
My goodness.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wow-wee.
A proud Victorian parked permanently in the west who would have played 300 AFL games if not for his incredibly small hands.
Goodness gracious me.
Together, they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who.
And this is your favourite footy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Well, hello everybody. It is Thursday, so time for the second edition this week of the Duff and Quarters podcast. We are brought to you by Tab Touch. Get closer to the AFL action with Tab Touch. Please gamble responsibly and please call the Gambler's Helpline on 1800 858 858 if you run into any difficulties. I have with me in the studio Josh Garlop, our brilliant producer, and Mark Redding's golden tonsils. He's sitting in for Quarters, who's still taking a well-earned break. Skeet, we've got some news. Some of it's about fixtures, some of it's about injuries, and some of it's about Eddie Maguire. But let's start with the fixtures that have just been released this morning.
Yeah, they've got some importance for WA footy fans as well. Round 7 and 8 have been released. Now, these fixtures were supposed to come out maybe a week or so ago, but because of the Brisbane outbreak, COVID, the AFL just holding fire, they've decided now's the right time to pull the trigger. So from a local point of view, the Derby, the much-anticipated first Derby of season 2021, May 2nd, Sunday afternoon, 2:40 Optus Stadium. And that's, well, if you love your Sunday afternoon footy, great. Perhaps a Saturday night game gives it a more marquee feel about it, but that's round 7. And then round 8, the only other round that's been released by the AFL at the moment, sees Sunday, May 9, which off the top of my head, Duff, I'm not 100% sure, but this might well be Mother's Day. I'm only guessing. It might be later in the month, but I should have known that. But anyway, Hawthorn take on the Eagles, 11:10 Western Standard Time, MCG, and that rolls effectively into the Fremantle-Brisbane game on TV on 7 at 2:40 p.m. again at Optus Stadium, at the Dockers hosting the Brisbane Lions.
So that probably tells you the next few weeks is pretty important for both clubs, obviously, but in particular Fremantle, because West Coast in round 7, Brisbane in round 8, they're going to be big games and tough games to win. So the Dockers need to pinch a couple over the next couple of weeks, don't they?
Particularly a team like Hawthorn this Sunday, who probably not going to figure in the 8. And if you can't beat the Hawks at home, you know you're going to struggle, I think, away from home against the better sides. And you really need to lock away the 4 points this Sunday to keep yourself even with the ledger.
So we know that the Dockers are struggling with injuries at the moment. There's mixed news on that front. We know that the Cavalry is going to be coming in a week or two, and there'll be three or four players coming back into contention in those couple of weeks. But they lose Hayden Young for 12 weeks. That's a big hammy. So that basically means probably they're probably weighing up whether to have surgery over the next couple of weeks. But 12 weeks is a big hamstring. That tends to indicate tendon damage or something like that.
And it just also indicates that Hayden Young last year with syndesmosis, he missed essentially the back end of the, well, most of the year, let's be
only
honest.
Only really played a third of the season.
Yeah, so he hasn't had any football to give to the Fremantle Dockers at this point. So on the upside, they're not accustomed to having him there at the moment, but gee whiz, he's a loss to them, a young player, and he's not their best player by any means, but he's a young player with 20, 30, 40 games under him, can be something pretty important, that Fremantle lineup. So that's a huge blow.
I think the good news about this is that because it's happened early in the season, there'll be a bye at some point in the middle of the season. He's probably going to be back for the last 6, 7 or 8 games, and that will probably, you know, at least if he can get into the team and play those games and he gets sort of like maybe 10 or 11 games this season and gets a good preseason into him for next season. The game is brutal now, Skeet, and even some of the soft tissue injuries are being caused by impacts. So we thought Hayden Young had a cork because he got crashed into low to the ground. I think it was either Harry Mackay or Levi Casbolt, one of the big Carlton forwards, plunged into him when he's low. Clearly, it's kind of contorted his body at a funny angle. He's ended up with a badly torn hamstring. Josh Tracy, according to Justin Longmuir, unlikely to play this week. So I think it sounds like Justin's keen to give the two ruck forward structure another go. They're optimistic that Nathan Fyfe will play this weekend. So their two ruck forward structure changes a little bit if Fyfe can go forward for a significant period of time. And they will also resist the temptation to rush Sam Sturt into the team. The feeling was that he needs another run at waffle level, that he's a bit underdone, even though he kicked the 5 goals last week. So they're going to have to make some changes. We know Nathan Fyfe will be one of those changes, but we know Lachie Schultz comes out. We know Hayden Young comes out. So it's going to be interesting to see what other changes they make. Maybe Bailey Banfield due to return after his ankle concern, which happened when Brad Shepherd crashed into him below the knees in the preseason derby.
So you're suggesting, given what they dished up against Carlton on the weekend, that on form there's going to be no player pays the price for what happened at Marvel Stadium? And do you think the injury scenario, Fyfe coming back, means it's pretty much seamless? And Justin may be showing some faith in his group to respond for the second time this season.
No, I suspect a bit one or two will pay the price. I think they were really disappointed that when Carlton added a bit of GST to everything they were throwing at Andrew Brayshaw, that none of the older, harder bodies around the place stood up to be counted and to try and physically make a difference. So I think there'll be a consequence for that. Yes, the game against Hawthorn becomes a pivotal game in this season. I think it's one that 2 weeks ago we would have said, well, I'll win this. And now we're thinking, well, they've got a lot of injuries. They didn't play well last week. And Hawthorn have been, you know, solid, I think, without being spectacular, but solid. So I'm going to be fascinated to see how they go. Very important. If they can get back to 2-2 and they start getting bodies back, then they're in a position to, at some stage, make some ground on the competition over the back half of the season.
Oh, I think they're going to be like that for a chunk of the year, in my mind. They're going to be trying to stay level with the ledger. They're going to be a team that might win 10, 11 games and probably just fall short. I'm hoping that's the case for Fremantle. They get that many wins. But, yeah, they don't want to lose these types of matches because, as you said, that run against the Eagles in round 7, Brisbane round 8, there's enough teams in the front of the car going, wow, there's a bit to be concerned about in your win-loss ratio.
Yep, absolutely. So the first thing to do when you're a young team, a developing team, is take care of your home ground advantage. And so that's really important that they do that this weekend against the Hawks, who aren't great and are in a bit of a rebuild, but they will be well-coached and they will be well-structured. So they will present a challenge for Fremantle.
And what they've done, I think, with Alistair Clarkson is because they aren't as well versed with the talent and class of previous Hawthorn sides, he's making sure, a bit like Fremantle, that their defence is bunkered down. So I'm not expecting a high-scoring game, potentially some rain around on Sunday as well. I expect this to be a real grind between two teams that don't have great forward lines. The Hawks really struggled to take marks inside 50 against the Cats on Easter Monday. Fremantle, well, apart from the inaccuracy against the Giants, they could have kicked a big score on that day, but you don't expect more than 15 goals a week from Fremantle at this stage. In fact, if you get 10 to 12 out of them, that's probably going to be about the average. So I expect a low-scoring affair. Which defence stands up the best will win. Which midfield gets on top will probably give their forwards enough chance. But I'm not overly confident of a shootout. In fact, I think it'll be a real scrap.
So assuming that Nathan Fyfe does play, and they seem optimistic that he will play, if you're Fremantle, does he play? Does he start as a forward and be called into the midfield if needed, or does he start as a midfielder and be called into the forward line if needed?
Well, you talk about horses for courses. I didn't mind. I think your theory, and Justin Longmuir had the same idea back in round 2 against the Giants, that if your young midfield can do the job initially and you can have Fyfe there just to completely keep the Hawthorn defence really on their toes, and that would be the ideal scenario. Whether they can afford to do that with O'Meara and Mitchell inside the centre square, I'm just not so sure that they'll stick with Fyfe in the forward line at the start on Sunday. Maybe let's just make a statement, get Fyfe in there, win some ball, and then see where the match heads from there.
And maybe also not allow Hawthorn to draw a target on the head of a Brayshaw or a Chera or a Sarong. Basically say, hey, the big dog's in here. You're going to have to take care of him from the start. I think that is probably the way for Fremantle to go in this one, to put him in there at the start, see how their forward line holds up, and if they're unproductive, then maybe he goes forward a bit more.
Yep, no question about that. So that's something they're going to have to deal with in the next couple of days. Obviously, Thursday, their main training session, so that will all play out. But I reckon in the back of their mind, they know what they're doing.
Okay, so Xavier O'Neill looks like he'll play at West Coast, and the reason he will play because he played well in the Waffle last year and obviously last week, sorry, and they don't have Luke Shuey. Some talk that they may explore options further afield trying to get Luke Shuey's hamstring right.
What, send him to Germany? You can't do that at the moment.
You can't do that at the moment, but maybe if things improve and maybe if there's, you know, vaccinations and that sort of thing. That
yeah, well, that is a last-ditch effort. I'm just trying to think. It was Max Rook from Geelong.
Harley Bennell. But Usain Bolt went to that bloke and he fixed him as well.
He did. But Max, I think, went to Germany. And did Harley go to Germany as well?
Harley went to see Healing Hands, yes.
The Healing Hands, well.
Hans van Wolfenaart, I think his name is.
At the end of the day, it didn't work, did it? But not for Harley in any case. So, it's a fascinating one for the Eagles because Adam Simpson looks at a bit of a loss as to what to do with him in terms of getting his body right. Is it time? Is it what they're doing? Do you need an outside set of eyes?
We did have a discussion on Tuesday, Skeet, about, you know, what happens with these Ferraris when they break. And we talked a little bit about Stephen Hill. My mail at the moment is that Fremantle is still trying to get Stephen Hill up. So that's on that front. And certainly West Coast would be 12 to 18 months away from conceding on Luke Shuey. You know, he's the captain of the club. He was best on ground up until the point he was injured on the weekend. I think that they will go through a whole range of options to see if they can stand him up before they concede. Fremantle is probably considerably closer than that than Stephen Hill, but still trying to get him up and still trying to get some footy out of him this year.
Yeah, I'm not confident with Stephen Hill. I think there's something amiss with his body. Obviously, the thigh's been a big issue and he's had just the soft tissue stuff. So, look, if he comes back, that'd be great. I think, if nothing else, just to say farewell. I don't think he'll be playing on in 2022.
I wouldn't have thought so,
be very surprised if that's the case. As for Luke Shuey, he's too good a player to not do everything conceivably possible to make sure that he can get back to some sort of footy that we know he can play. And put it this way, without him, we talked about in 2018 without, you know, Gaff and Nat Nui and Shepherd, how the Eagles going to win the flag. Well, without Shuey, it becomes a real question mark as well, because what we saw on Saturday night against Port Adelaide, with him inside the middle of the ground, the Eagles look a vastly different team.
Yeah, I don't think they win the flag without Luke Shuey. It's interesting. We thought that was a stroke of genius in the first quarter when he volleyed the ball out of the air and it landed in Liam Ryan's lap. In hindsight, is that a guy that's not confident in bending to get the ball because of his hamstring concern?
I didn't think so at the time. I was calling that moment and I thought it was more a case of, well, the ball's just in the area and it was innovative, if nothing else. It was opportunistic and it worked out well. I don't think there was anything from what I saw that suggested, hang on, he's not prepared to bend down or stretch himself and his concern. So, and let's be honest, when he was out there for, what, three quarters of the match, he was doing enough to suggest he was okay.
Yeah. No, I think but you do start to get that doubt in your mind, don't you? If you've had a series of soft tissue injuries like he's had, and he's had some calves as well as hamstrings, and as they say about the calf, it's the old man's injury.
Yes, I know. I've done it myself. Should I say this publicly? Playing social netball, Joshy, which I was playing against my wife in
nothing wrong with that. A lot of fun.
Yeah, well, it can be, although I came off, I was a bit like Yates in that grand final in 1989, because I thought I want to impose myself in this mixed netball game. And so without doing a warm-up, I've sprinted for, you know, the line-up, and I went 5 metres and I heard this pop in my calf. And I've done a hamstring, which is bad, but, gee, a calf, that's horrendous. I was almost in tears.
It feels like an explosion in the bottom
terrible.
Of the league, didn't it?
Can I just confirm you didn't actually do it in the game? It was in the warm-up.
No, the game had started and I hadn't warmed up properly and I went bang. Okay. And I thought I'd just show my wife exactly where I was at with my athletic career. And, yeah, it showed her. I'm absolutely cooked.
It's funny you say that, because I did a calf about 20 years ago and it was a similar scenario. It was the male pride thing. I used to run with a group of people through Kings Park twice early in the morning, and I could beat everybody except this woman triathlete who used to get out in front of me and I could never run her down. And we were on a 12K run through Kings Park. She got me up a hill and basically got 20 metres out in front of me, and I thought, I'll run her down going across the top near the tennis courts there. Once it flattens out, I thought I'll catch her and pass her, and my calf got tight and I wouldn't quit because I had to beat her. and about 200 metres from the finish, the calf just exploded. And I mean, it absolutely exploded, and it wasn't right for 12 months after.
Yeah, I was on crutches after my episode, but we do digress because we're talking to Luke Shuey. I'm trying to think of other calves that have gone in more recent times, but yeah, Buddy's had some, but again, that over once you get over 30 in an AFL sense, that's when you become very susceptible.
Well, Harley Bennell's probably the most famous calf, isn't it? What, about 25 tears in his, so once he's went, he just couldn't get it right. Let's see if we can tip a couple of winners for our punters, Skeet.
Yes, I got six last week, so I'm feeling a little more confident than I was the week before. But again, you've pointed this out, and I've said all along, 50-50 games in tipping is what it's all about. Forget the the Sydney upset on Richmond. That can happen. No one's tipped the Swans, so it's more about just getting those games that are a line ball.
Yeah, and we're going all right in that sense, I reckon, so far. I think we might have missed a couple, but certainly it's only really the upsets that have gotten me so far. So Sydney versus Essendon at the SCG, and Sydney, according to Tab Touch, will be $1.21 favourites, Essendon at $4.40. The Bombers were really, really impressive against St Kilda last weekend. Do you give them a chance against the red-hot Swans on the SCG?
Their form or their record against Sydney is not all that bad. And they played the SCG reasonably well. The Swans, mind you, have won their seven of their past eight games at the ground against Essendon. But at times they've been really competitive. Zach Merritt, I think, is going to be really important tonight to see what he can do. But Buddy's back. The Swans, their form, Brisbane, Richmond, impeccable. Essendon's victory over St Kilda, impressive as it was. I thought the Saints were deplorable, so I'm not going to take too much out of that. I still think they're down on manpower. I think the Bombers will struggle to match this young, exciting Sydney side, which is really on the up and could be anything in 2021.
So Sydney, three games, three Rising Star nominees, and if you were looking for the unluckiest bloke to not get a nomination, it's probably Sam Wicks, who got the 10 coaches votes last weekend and didn't get the nomination. Chad Warner got it. So they're probably four going into three as far as Rising Star nominations go so far.
His time will come, and so will Logan McDonald's at some point, I'm guessing. That's just a great situation for Sydney to be in. As you said, three Rising Stars. Warner, very good. I'm told he's brother's going to be even better at some
point. I've heard that.
So that's a massive wrap on that front. But Sydney's done really well. And the horse, he just finds a way after a bit of a lull in 2020, and obviously some weird things happened to the whole competition. But this team, exciting to watch, 100 points per game, may it continue. They're like the old days when we used to watch Sunday afternoon football from the SCG, Jared Healy and the Swanettes and all that. Gee, the Sydney Swans were part of our staple diet, and I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with this year.
And as we started the conversation a couple of weeks ago on their academy, I noticed that Chris Scott's weighed into that now, and Sydney's defence of it is hilarious because they've tried to change the subject a little bit. They've gone, oh, we've spent a lot of money on this and, you know, we've done this and we've paid a price for this. Yeah, we know. But you've still got Heaney, Mills, Blakey, Wicks, Goulden and Campbell running around in your team, and that's the point. On field, it's a massive leg up.
It is. That being said, would the AFL prefer what's happening with Sydney at the moment or the – although they've still got the talent at the Giants, there seems to be a real concern as to what's coming their way in the next 12 months.
The problem for them is, though, isn't it? A Sydney established club can retain players. Giants, not established club, can't retain players. So the Giants are probably producing as much talent. It's just going through them like a sieve.
Yep.
And they keep losing stuff out of the bottom just as they're trying to load up at the top. And I think that's the big problem for the Giants. And I still think Leon Cameron is under pressure, even though they were better.
They were brave.
They were brave against Melbourne. You know, down on injuries, down on manpower, but certainly brave. All right, we tipping Sydney?
We are going with Sydney, yes, with a degree of confidence.
Port Adelaide versus Richmond. Skeet, this is at Adelaide Oval tomorrow night. I reckon this... Like, I'm going to declare my hand at the outset. I'm going to tip Port because I think Port has to bounce back after a pretty disappointing effort in Perth last weekend. But I'm also interested to see what sort of performance we get from the Tigers, because in past years, the great Richmond teams, this would be a game they would pinch. So I don't think they'll win this, but I want to see whether they're up to their eyeballs in it or whether they're a little bit disappointing, because that's going to tell me a bit about where Richmond are at this stage.
It might also tell us just where the appetite level is.
Yes.
And it's just so hard to keep the hunger at the right levels after you've won a couple of premierships in a row. This is coming from the outside, that how you can maintain that week in and week out. If they're anywhere near contending at the end of the home and away season, watch out. But it's that battle to get to through to that point against a team like Port Adelaide that had a look last year, a prelim final, and they are desperate to make an impact. Whereas I just wonder whether Richmond at times, and they may well bounce back and blow Port out of the water, but I just suspect without Prestia in the lineup, Cochin, a bit of a doubter as to his body at the moment. I just think Port's probably got enough tricks up their sleeve and enough motivation, the hunger to win the Friday night battle between these two.
So $1.59 Port with Tab Touch. Richmond is at $2.35, which is not bad odds for a team that's won three of the last four. But I think you're right. I think that often when a team is in Richmond's position, they will have periods during the year where they look every bit as good as they have been, but they will trip up often enough that they finish fifth, sixth or seventh rather than second, third or fourth. And then they deny themselves the double chance. If there's interstate clubs in the finals, they have to go and travel. Don't forget that Port Adelaide were not very far away from beating them in that preliminary final at Adelaide Oval last year. Port pushed them, and that was almost the game of the final series for me, Skeet. Like, it was an absolutely epic battle. And to me, the difference in the contest was the ability of Revolt and Lynch not to get outmarked, whereas Charlie Dixon got outmarked a couple of times in the last quarter that enabled Richmond to bounce, whereas their tall forwards were always giving their small forwards a chance to feed off something. And of course, they did have one D Martin running around in pretty good nick for them as well.
And Charlie Dixon was disappointing last week at Optus Stadium. In fact, you can put a line through about a dozen Port players that if you were to give them a ticker across, they wouldn't be getting too much love from the teacher.
No, they wouldn't. And we talk about Richmond, can they bounce back? But that Port Adelaide needs to bounce back pretty strongly from that.
Yeah, and we expect they will. So really good Friday night game. And that, I guess, is, even though these fixtures were in place, so well, the rolling fixtures might give these types of matches more chance to unfold instead of a Saturday afternoon, or, well, we might see more marquees on a Friday night, which hopefully continues.
Western Bulldogs, so are we tipping Port?
Going with Port, but, you know, you're always a bit hesitant when you put your tip in and Richmond isn't circled, because we know what their best is. Their best is good enough.
So Western Bulldogs versus Brisbane. It's Saturday, 11:35 our time. It's in Ballarat.
Yes.
Do you know what Ballarat means?
No, but I have been there. Very briefly, I stayed there with a guy called Dean Capobianco going back many years, the sprinter, and we had a night in Ballarat, and it was the middle of winter. Josh, you're laughing, but we stayed at a house, and it was so cold. I was in the couch, and I had to put some bean bags on top of me just to stay warm. It was that cold. Luckily, it's only April, and I'm sure those conditions aren't reflective of what's happening there weather-wise at the moment, but, gee, it's a bloody cold place.
I'm told Ballarat literally means hole in the ground.
Well, there you go. That probably summed up how we were travelling.
So I think you're right. I think if you're going to go to Ballarat and play, this is the time of year to go and play there, not in the middle of winter, not in the deepest, darkest depths of winter. Doggies at $1.51 to win this. They've had a great start to the season. They are unbeaten. Brisbane have shown a lot of character to be 1-2. Should have beaten Geelong, but for an umpiring call. Mm. They're at $2.60. Had a great win at the Death against Collingwood last weekend. Are Brisbane playing well enough to challenge the Dogs in Ballarat?
I think they are. And look, I've got this in terms of upsets. I know it's not a big upset, but I think this is a game that we sort of just have selected everyone, the Western Bulldogs, without thinking about the Brisbane side. I think what they did against Geelong, what they produced against Collingwood, showed a fair degree of character. And as good as the Bulldogs were against the Eagles, they've pushed aside North Melbourne initially. Round one got hold of Collingwood. I'm not 100% convinced. Their midfield's very good, but I'm not 100% convinced that they're as good as what people are saying at the moment. That might change. Josh Bruce, who, by the way, is off the drink. So I think it's about 70 or 80 days, I've been told, that hasn't had a sip. And if he goes for the rest of the season, then he could end up with 150 goals. He's if he stays that way. But, yeah, that's just a sacrifice that Josh has made, I'm told, at the moment. So well done to him. The Brisbane Lions I think, have been underplayed in this contest in terms of their ability to win.
Yeah, I agree. I still worry about the Dogs, whether the gun midfield that they've got, whether that translates fully to big scores on the board. And, you know, yeah, Josh Bruce kicked 10 goals. He kicked them against North Melbourne. And there's going to be a lot of blokes kicking big tallies against North Melbourne.
They'll fill their boots up, won't they?
Yeah, and which is, you know, we'll get to North a bit later on. That it's going to be a very challenging year for them. But certainly I want to see Josh Bruce produce something like that. Or I want to see him produce 4 goals against a gun team. That's what I want to see Josh Bruce do, not produce 10 against a team that's at ground zero on what is going to be a very challenging rebuild.
Well, if he keeps drinking water during the weekend on week, I'm telling you, that could be a prototype that it will work for footballers going forward. Stay off the drink for the whole season. Could you do that? I couldn't.
I do 2 and 5.
Yeah, I'm the same.
I do 2 and 5, so I try and only have alcohol 2 days a week and non-alcohol 5 days a week. It doesn't always translate.
Yeah, I do the same. But as my wife said, you do very well Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, but Friday and Saturday you binge for the rest of Mount Lawley. You cover the cost of everyone on Mount Lawley. So yeah, well, that little things we have to work on. But we're a work in progress, aren't we?
What you can say about Josh Bruce, he looks fitter.
Yep.
He looks a little bit more trim. He looks a little bit more athletic, and he has talent. We know that. We've always said about Josh Bruce that the gap between his best and his worst is horrendously big, and that's been the problem for him. So if he can narrow that, he is a viable power forward in the AFL and a very important part of anything the Western Bulldogs do regarding contention this year.
Yep, should be a good game of footy. Just having a look at Ballarat's weather for Saturday, for what it's worth, 14 degrees and rain. So not really weather that you'd think the Lions would be overly comfortable with, but again, I think they're a really good side. What they showed last week showed me they're on the same page and could be season defining. Maybe not this week, but I think it will hold them in good stead going forward.
So you think a tight one and Dogs win?
Yes, absolutely.
Yep, I'm the same. All right, moving on to Saturday afternoon, St Kilda versus West Coast at Marvel Stadium. West Coast clear favourites in this, $1.44. St Kilda, $2.80. The Saints will get Rowan Marshall back, we are told, but they've also lost Jade Gresham for a long period of time, and they are getting bad news on Dan Hannabry and Jaron Geary. They're not going to be back for a while either. So the Saints haven't started the season well, but they've also got injury concerns. So I'm not seeing them challenging West Coast in this one.
I'm seeing St Kilda throw the kitchen sink at the Eagles here. In terms of their effort, because it was just pathetic against the Bombers on the weekend. So I expect a far better performance in terms of effort. I just don't think they're going to have the class to overcome West Coast. When you look at the defensive capabilities of the Eagles and then what they can bring to the table up forward, their midfield might be a little weakened again, or will be with no Luke Shuey, but there's a case to be made that I just think class will prevail in this one, and I'm not sure the Saints and a great example going back to last year at the Gabba when the Eagles were under the pump, completely physically undermanned.
-7 of their best 22 in that game.
And they still got up and won.
And I think they lost McGovern mid-match in that game.
Yes, exactly. So everything was conspiring against an Eagles victory at the Gabba that night. They still found a way, and I suspect they are in a lot better health than they were back then.
Great insight into the way Adam Simpson goes about his business in making their mark, which covered extensively one episode, the build-up to that game, and how he implored his players that because they were down on manpower, they're going to have to do some different things. He asked them to embrace those things, asked them to show care for each other, and asked them to believe in those changes. It was a super piece of coaching, and he certainly got the result that he wanted.
Well, the result that he wanted on Saturday night was he got all his big numbers from the likes of Nat Nui and Gaff had 36 touches. So this side, all things being equal, if they can get Yo and Shuey back into the mix, I just have a reasonable feeling about the Eagles, particularly playing that 10-11 home matches at Optus Stadium. They're top 4 bound, and I think they're playing good enough footy at the moment to take care of St Kilda at Marvel Stadium.
Yeah, I don't know where you put them. I had them 5th, and I'm feeling at the moment that they were a bit unders at 5th.
Yeah. Well, I think I had them about the same spot. I just wasn't quite sure about how they would fare in the midfield and how they would back up after last year. But, yeah, look, if you said to me top four, they're going to finish, I wouldn't raise an eyebrow the way they're going.
West Coast comfortably?
I'll say between 3 to 5 goals. I do think St Kilda will show something this weekend. I mean, it's incumbent on them to give their supporters better than what they did last.
So a pretty hot first half.
I would have thought that St Kilda will throw everything, but just not the know-how to trouble the Eagles when it really matters.
Collingwood versus GWS later on Saturday. GWS $4.20, Collingwood at $1.23 with Tab Touch. Geez, GWS in recent seasons, we ask a lot of questions about GWS, but they don't have a lot of luck with injury, do they? And now Cornelio, Phil Davis, losing them last weekend on top of the other injury concerns they've had going into the season.
Yeah, really tough for them. And to be honest with you, that was their best performance of the season almost against Melbourne. They still fell 4 goals short. But, yeah, there's a concern that the spirit is there at times, but if you keep losing, that can really draw the club down. And I just wonder, I don't see them making the 8, of course, but I just wonder how much they will fall this year with those injuries and Leon Cameron trying to put on the brave face. I can't see them getting within 4 or 5 goals of Collingwood on the basis of their injuries. The game's been played in Melbourne, and Collingwood, I think, are going to have their measure.
Collingwood needs a win too.
Absolutely.
So, you know, Collingwood were pretty good. What are they, 1-2, I think, the Pies?
Yeah, lost to, they've beaten Carlton.
Pretty good against Carlton.
But that's, you know, that question, that forms can be thrown up in the air a little bit at the moment.
They would really feel like they blew one against the Brisbane Lions, wouldn't they?
Yep. So, yeah, I'm still not sure where Collingwood sits in the scheme of things, whether they are a top 8 side or not.
Yeah, I think there's 3 or 4 teams that are 7 to 11, and I still have, you know, Fremantle in that mix. I have Carlton in that mix. I have Collingwood in that mix as well. I think Collingwood could easily miss, but they could easily make it as well. I think there's a group of teams that are a little bit off the best ones, but are also a little bit better than the ones that are in dire trouble and in rebuild mode down the bottom. And, of course, the team that we probably didn't have in that mix and maybe even better than that at the moment is Sydney. I think most of us had Sydney finishing bottom 6, and now they could easily be top, well, certainly top 8 and maybe even top 6 based on what we've seen so far.
Absolutely, no doubt about that. Yeah, a win for Collingwood for me, I would have thought.
Gold Coast versus Carlton. It's at Metricon Stadium. It's on Saturday afternoon or Saturday evening. The Blues go into this one as favourite, Skeet. This is one of those 50-50 games. They're at $1.85 with Tab Touch. Gold Coast at $2. Now, we talked about Gold Coast ruck woes earlier in the week, so that's going to be the challenge for them. They're probably going to have to ruck someone like a Chris Burgess against Mark Pittenay, so that's going to be a big job for Chris Burgess at 192 centimetres. I guess all they ask him to do is compete. If they can get a reasonable result out of that, can Gold Coast get this win? I'm going to tip the Suns in this one.
I have as well in the paper today. I did agonise over this a bit, though. Up at Metricon Stadium, I've liked what the Suns have done so far this season. They were beaten by the Eagles, they were beaten by Adelaide, but they are showing enough to me that there's a bit of resilience. And to be honest with you, this time of the year is probably the best time to stick with the Suns, because they're fresher, the young players seem to be more able to finish off matches. So, yeah, I think despite the fact that Witt's out of the side, that they can somehow cover. And I'm not bored on Carlton. Fremantle, I thought, were pretty average last week. So I'm going to reserve judgment on Carlton until they beat somebody of significance.
Yeah, the Gold Coast Suns through a season are like the sun through a day, aren't they? Early, they're the rising sun, and then later, they're the setting sun. Their seasons do tend to turn out a bit that way. I'm going to show a bit of faith in them. I think their young talent is maturing slowly, and I hope they can get a win and get themselves to 2-2 in this season, because I think they're you want to see the Suns at round 8 be, you know, have 3 or 4 wins on the board, still retaining some interest in the season and hopefully, you know, spiking some interest in footy in Queensland.
Yeah, and guys are king in attack, and they've got the core group of young players that I think Lukosius, really good. You mentioned Tuk Miller the other week. They've got the players there, I think, to be more than competitive, particularly at home. A night game, Carlton. Do they put someone – does Paddy Cripps get some real attention from a Tuk Miller or someone of that nature to try and shut him down?
Well, maybe Sam Walsh does. Maybe they just go, well, it's hard to stop Paddy Cripps. He's 195 centimetres. He does all his work inside as the ball. Maybe we stop the runner. And that's Sam Walsh. So if you take him out, then I think that that's going to make a difference to Carlton. On the flip side of that, Carlton got Ed Curnow paying close attention to Andrew Brayshaw last week. Now, normally we would say, well, okay, that happens to Matt Rowell at Gold Coast. But in Matt Rowell's absence, does Noah Anderson, the number two pick in that draft, he had 36 against North Melbourne a couple of weeks ago. Is he the player that gets that attention from Ed Curnow?
Yeah, absolutely. And those matchups will be considered by both groups over the next 48 hours. But Saturday night, I'm looking forward to that one, actually. Suns v Carlton.
Suns just for both of us, I think. Back in Melbourne, North Melbourne versus Adelaide on Sunday, the early Sunday game. North Melbourne, $3.50 with Tab Touch. That's probably as short as they're going to be for most of the year. Adelaide, $1.31. Adelaide, they're 2-1. They were excellent against Geelong in round one. They were not so good against Sydney in round two, and they did well enough to get the chocolates in round three against Gold Coast, but Gold Coast had significant injury concerns to come out of that match. So I think Adelaide deserves to be favourites in this. Tex Walker flying as a forward. This will be a Marvel Stadium game.
This is a reverse blockbuster. This is the antithesis of a blockbuster. Like Richmond, Port Adelaide on Friday night at Adelaide Oval, that to me has got stars written all over it. This has got about as much appeal as sitting alongside quarters at a bar at late at night when he gibbers on. It is not worth the price of admission, I would have thought. Seriously, this is not a game that I'll be wasting any time watching.
Oh, yeah, and I'll be watching it. I want to see, because what I want to see from when a team is at ground zero in a rebuild like North Melbourne is, I want to see what their kids are like. And so I'll watch a lot of North Melbourne this year because I want to see whether Taron Thomas is coming on. Curtis Taylor obviously got a big knock in round one, but when he comes back and plays, want to see how he goes. I want to see if their Mackay, Ben Mackay, can stand up as a power defender. I also want to see just whether they're middle-of-the-road players or they're slightly older than young players, like a Jai Simpkin, whether they've made any progress.
So how many people do you think will go to Marvel Stadium on Sunday? 15?
Well, Adelaide does have a bit of a following.
That's what I was saying. Adelaide's got a bit of a...
So I think they can get to 20.
Okay.
I'd be surprised if there's less than 20.
Yeah, I won't be getting my two eyeballs.
You won't be.
Well, I'm watching a bunch of matches this weekend, Duff. That's not one that's going to consume me greatly. I might watch it before I go to the Dockers game on Sunday. But yeah, it's. Let's be honest. It's not. You know, it's not going to exactly get people excited.
No, it's not.
But you're such a loyal person to the football code and North.
Well,
Melbourne.
I get fascinated by different things to the normal punter. So I'm going to tip Adelaide to win this.
Yep, me
and
too.
I think it's a really tough year for North Melbourne. I think this is going to be the toughest of tough rebuilds because the mechanisms that coaches used to use when they were at the start of a rebuild to jam the game up and to slow the opponent down, you can't do them anymore. The game's too open. The ball's in motion. So they're going to have to find some mechanisms to give their players some positivity. And I like the Kevin Sheedy trick that he played at GWS in their early days where they didn't celebrate wins in matches. They celebrated wins in quarters. And they actually had their own premiership ladder up on the board in the rooms to show how many quarters they'd won. And he kept them focused on win this quarter, you know. And they were able to get some positivity out of that. And I think that was a really smart move by a very experienced and canny coach. And I think North Melbourne's going to have to do something similar this year. If they have a good quarter, celebrate the little wins before they worry about the big ones.
Well, they did against Port Adelaide, first quarter against them. They were really up and about. So they didn't take their chances. And, of course, after that, it really went downhill in that opening game. But you're right, they have to take those incremental wins and try to build and, hopefully – get through the season, you know, if they could pick up three or four wins, that would be a bonus.
But we're saying this won't be one of those wins.
Don't think so. But Adelaide aren't that good. So, yeah, they'd think they're a chance.
Okay. Melbourne versus Geelong. Later on Sunday at the MCG, Geelong's a $1.85 favourite in this game. Melbourne is at $2. Skeet, I'm going to go with the outsiders in this one. I'm going to go with the D's.
Yeah, tough one. I've tipped the Cats. Their record against Melbourne is very good. That's where it does get tricky because on form, Melbourne hasn't done anything wrong. Their midfield's looking really sound. Just wonder whether Geelong at some point, they do play a slower game, slower tempo, kick mark and really a measured build-up, whether they'll have to adjust what they're doing. They're getting results at the moment, albeit by less than a kick on two matches. Some concerns about how they're tracking, but they are winning, which gives you a sense of – and by the way, you're a Cats man. You've tipped them for the flag, but I can just feel the energy just seeping out of you when it comes to talking about Geelong.
Well, I don't like the way they're playing. I mean, yeah, they've won. But they shouldn't have won against Brisbane, let's face it. And they were lucky to win on Monday. You know, they faffed around with it and nearly coughed it up. I thought the whole point of bringing Smith and Higgins in was to get run and go quicker. And they seem to have done – they've done the old Leslie Nielsen thing out of flying highs. No, that's just what they'll be expecting us to do. Let's do the absolute opposite and go slower. And I don't like the way they're playing. I think they're going to have to shift that. Maybe that changes when Patrick Dangerfield comes back, but he doesn't come back until next week. They certainly look better with Mitch Duncan back in the team. Yep. And I think they get Sam Menegola back this week. So some of the troops are starting to arrive. But I reckon, Skeet, that the clubs that are really turning it around quickly, like your Sydneys and these clubs, they've gotten young wheels into their team. And Geelong has gone in the opposite direction to that. So I'm not off the bandwagon, but as I said to you last week, I'm on a ski rope out the back of it.
Yeah, look, I didn't mind the work of O'Connor, who's come in and kept Tom Mitchell to 24 on Easter Monday.
And so did the job on Lachie Neal.
Did the job on Lachie Neal. So that's promising. But I do agree, and the more pace that Geelong can get into their list or into their side, it gives me more confidence. I'm sticking with Geelong. MCG, I think they've probably, if you're weighing up the forward line of the two sides, I think given Tom Hawkins and co, I think probably can kick you a better score. But there's a lot of question marks over how Geelong's tracking. Melbourne, faultless really, having beaten Fremantle, which I'm not sure where that puts them in this pecking order, but the Saints, they got hold of, and they've been a bit iffy. The Giants have been banged up. So I'm not discounting what Melbourne's done. It's been terrific, but this is their first real, real test.
Yep, absolutely. I just wonder whether when you flirt with form a little bit like Geelong has done, and they've gotten away with it a little bit, whether sooner or later it catches up with you before you do a bit of a reset. And so, yeah, it's going to be a fascinating one. I won't be at all surprised if I'm wrong, but I reckon the D's have done enough to earn the tip.
I'm going the Cats, and I'm not sure they have deserved my tip, but I'm going more on trust and the record they have against the Demons more than anything. So, yeah, we differ on that, but that's one of those 50-50 games.
Fremantle versus Hawthorn, which I think is probably going to be another 50-50 game at Optus Stadium, 2:40 p.m. on Sunday afternoon. Fremantle are $1.54 favourites, Hawthorn at $2.50 with Tab Touch. Look, you can't recommend Fremantle based on what we saw last week, but I suspect, and I think you alluded to this, Skeet, on Tuesday when we're talking about this, young teams, they can be hot at home and cold away, and I think there's going to be a bit of that about Fremantle this weekend. I expect a fairly robust response from Fremantle. I'll be surprised if, apart from the injury concerns that we talked about earlier in the show, I'll be surprised if a couple of players don't pay the price for that effort at selection. I think they've got a few coming back this week, and they've got a lot coming back next week. And I think they'll start to try and shape their team and settle their team a little bit. And I think they'll send a message to a few this week. If they're not dropped, they'll be told when they run down the race, you better give us something this week because you're not going to be there next week otherwise. So expecting a strong response, and I'm not 100% sure about whether their injuries will disable their structure enough to bring Hawthorn right into this and over the top of them, but I do like them better than the Hawks at Optus.
any question marks, maybe in terms of changes for the Dockers? Lloyd Meek, does he get a spell for a
no,
week?
No, I think they'll go with the two ruckmen again. I think they're just worried about
Darcy's durability?
No, I think they're more worried about whether Josh Tracy needs a run of games in the waffle to get him into the season before he plays. We should remember with Josh Tracy, a lot was made of the three goals he kicked in an intra-club match. He kicked them after Joel Hamling was moved off him.
Yep.
And also, we made a bit of his two goals against West Coast in the first practice match. He kicked them after Tom Barris was moved off him. And he was actually playing on Harry Edwards. So playing on younger defenders, he certainly looks an impressive young man. He's a beautiful kick for goal. He's a very strong competitor. But I think they probably are a bit worried as to whether that holds up, that form holds up against genuine experienced AFL opposition. So we may see him go around in the waffle, not this weekend, but next weekend. And then we may see him stay in the waffle for 2 or 3 weeks before he comes into contention in the AFL. The good news for Fremantle is that they think Rory Lobb will play somewhere next weekend, mm-hmm. some minutes. They think that Griffin Logue will play minutes probably in the waffle this weekend. And obviously if Sam Sturt gets through another game in the waffle, we'd expect Sam Sturt, I think, to be in the selection mix up to his eyeballs next weekend. So the cavalry starts arriving, but hopefully they don't lose more bodies this weekend.
Yeah, it shapes as a game where goals are going to be hard to come by, just from what I've seen from both clubs so far.
Yep. And maybe that means that the wet conditions, that may suit Fremantle. If it becomes a bit of a slog, maybe that suits where they're at the moment more than a free-flowing, fast, moving, open game. What do you think?
I agree. If it's free-flowing and open, who wears number 29 for Hawthorn, Jayath, has got something to – how exhilarating was he at times against the Cats? He's got pace. He's got excitement about him. Uses the ball pretty well. I mean, he's almost – I mean, Cozzy Pickett's probably the most exciting young player coming through the comp at the moment. But tell you what, this young Hawthorn player's got something about him that's hard not to love.
Chung Kuth. Imagine if him and Michael Frederick get after a ball. There's going to be a bit of speed. You don't want to be the third player in that race for the ball, do you? No matter what team you're on, you're going to look like a pretty slow conveyance by the time that they get to the footy.
It's like a poor man's stool gift, but I'll tell you what, they'll be doing some Ks at Optus if they get on their wheels together. But that's the exciting part for Hawthorn, seeing a player like him come through, just as Michael Frederick, although having spoken to him this week on radio, he's a bit miffed that he hasn't been more accurate in front of goal. But he loves his footy. He loves playing for the Dockers, and he's one player that has to be persisted with.
And it's great that we've got these players from different backgrounds coming into the game now, isn't he? I think Jayath is Ethiopian.
And I think Frederick, from my memory, was born in Sudan. So that's a wonderful mix, as you say, of different cultures. And of course, we've had lots of different cultures represented over the past 10 or 15 years. They're becoming more common, and may that continue, and hopefully it inspires a new generation to come through from some of those countries that wouldn't ordinarily have players represent them at AFL level.
And Skeet, I was watching your call of the waffle, the Subiaco East Perth game, and of course we had a Jang
yep.
running around for East Perth. And who's the Quick, young guy?
Young Quick, who's very lightly framed.
Shows a bit though.
He shows a bit, yeah. Actually, I'm keen on him. He's got a lovely way about him, and he moves well. He's got some skills. He's a, as I say in horse racing, he's a little black booker just to keep an eye on where he is, and he's a player to keep an eye on.
All right, so we're both tipping Fremantle.
Tipping Fremantle with a fair degree of
trepidation.
Absolutely. Optus Stadium is probably the only reason, because if it was at the MCG, you'd be tipping Hawthorn, and so would I.
Yep, I think you're right. All right, moving right along. The Biggie Juice juicy topic of the week, brought to you by Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops.
It's all good, baby. It was all a dream.
Juicy topic of the week. That's the cleanest throw by Duff. I've done about 10 with him now. That's the cleanest you've done. That's brilliant. I loved it. And Josh just rode the audio superbly.
Oh, I did try very hard for that one. I keep on forgetting about that sting, and I managed to remember. And Josh did that sting so wonderfully well, so I should probably pay that more respect. All right, Eddie Maguire, relevance deprivation after three rounds.
No, I love Ed. I think he's great. He has an opinion. He's got good contacts. He was a bit bruised and a bit hurt after what happened at Collingwood. That's now behind him, and he's back making headlines and trying to change the world.
No, I agree. I think we were certainly with when the headhunters came for Ed, I think we were two of the more balanced ones. We were prepared to recognise the good he had done as well as the harm he had done. His 2028 vision. 20 teams, 12-team final series. What do you think?
Well, I think if we're going to expand, you can't do it by one club. So 19 for me doesn't make sense. 20 does make sense, but the concern is the depth of talent, the financial struggles of some clubs, particularly in Victoria. Does it add up? I'm not so sure. Tasmania, the Northern Territory, the two places that have been mooted by Eddie. Even potentially a third club in WA I saw mentioned somewhere.
I don't think the third club in WA works, and I've actually written stories about the third club in WA before. The problem with the third club in WA is who do you take your fans from? Now, if you take your fans from West Coast, you turn them from a mighty club into a still a strong club. More people who couldn't go to the footy get to the footy and support the new club. But what if half the Fremantle supporters leave and support the new club? You turn Fremantle into North Melbourne. So I just don't think it works. Certainly not yet. It may work in 20 years' time. If Fremantle win two flags in the next 20 years and are putting 50,000 bums on seats at Optus Stadium, then I think you can look at a third club in WA. But until then, I think it's too soon.
No, I totally agree. And I was about to say, once the Dockers have some sustained success, then you can, even then, I think the balance we have in WA at the moment is good enough. And when you look at Optus Stadium now, the capacity it holds at the present time, even for a big game, the Dockers still struggling to fill the ground. The Eagles, not so much. But I'm reluctant to, I don't think a third club here would work in the foreseeable. For certainly until we retire from our roles in the media, be it in 10 or 15 years, I just think the WA two-team town works. 20 teams with a team from the NT, is there a concern about the financial viability, about the fact of attracting players there? I love Eddie's foresight. I mean, I went to a press conference, would have been 10 years ago, Andrew Demetriou. It was at the Hyatt, I think it was. It might have been the Duxton. And he talked about having 18 teams in the comp, and everyone got very excited about it. And as it turns out,
he talked about a team in the Kimberley, didn't he?
Yeah, there was a bit of discussion out of left field, but he was on the money. Obviously, he was running the show at the time that 18 clubs would work, and he was very keen on GWS and the Suns. So that the investment that's been made in those two places thus far, the question is, has it been worth it? The return being what the AFL and football fans expected, not so sure. To go to 20 teams in 2028, 7 years away, I don't think it's relevant. I don't think it's possible.
Well, the interesting thing with the two new teams, okay, so they're tipping $30 million into Gold Coast. They're tipping about 20 to 25 into GWS. Now, that's over and above what would normally be about a $10 or $11 million AFL distribution. So let's say $19 million Gold Coast and let's say $13 or $14 million, so $33 million. I guess the question is, are those two clubs increasing the broadcast rights value of the AFL by $33 million a year?
I think not. Again, this won't change in the short term either, but there are too many clubs in Victoria. That's a given for everyone outside of Victoria. But
that's not the growth area, is it?
No.
Are they getting enough people in front of TV sets in Queensland and New South Wales to spike the broadcast rights by $33 million a year?
I don't think so.
Will they in the future?
I think it'll be a constant battle. I mean, we underestimate what the NRL is in Queensland and New South Wales and the power that it has. And the work that Peter Volandis, and like him or loathe him, he has become a hero to those league converts and league lovers because of his us against them mentality. The game, and I watch NRL quite regularly, is quick. It's exciting. It's got a lot of great moments in the match there. A bit like the AFL, though, their issue at the moment is the better teams, the gulf between the best and the worst is enormous. So, but back to your original point, very tough to sell to Queensland and New South Wales and get those numbers up as high as they'd like in the AFL centres. I don't think it's viable. As long as you get the piece of the pie that you're chasing, then it works.
So given what we've talked about there, if there's going to be a team in Tasmania, it basically has to be self-sustaining, doesn't it? Because they're not going to increase the TV ratings a lot because people down there already watch footy. They're already footy people. You might protect those ratings and stop them from jumping on the local basketball team because they now have a basketball team down there. So it's more ratings protection than ratings growth. So basically the Tasmanian government, and I think Eddie basically said this when he was talking, you know, put up or shut up, the Tasmanian government's going to have to invest very heavily in this team and make it their baby. And apart from the annual AFL distribution, they basically don't get any more money out of the AFL for doing it.
And starting from scratch, which is the way it would have to happen, an AFL club, which is awfully difficult, there's a lot of obstacles that are going to have to be overcome from Tasmania, not the least of which is the financial, attracting players. Have we got the depth to cover 20 teams?
And retaining players.
Yes.
I mean, that's the big thing, isn't it? You know, take Fremantle's current situation with Adam Chera. Now, I still think Fremantle's a good chance to retain Adam Chera, but it's certainly not signed, sealed and delivered at the moment. I suspect the next 2 months will tell a big tale with that. If a club playing at the best stadium in Australia in a football population, if a guy like Chera is looking at, well, I'm a Melbourne boy, I might want to go home to Melbourne, what chance have you got in Tasmania in the bleakest month of winter playing at Blundstone Arena?
Where the breeze or the gale is just howling across.
People are turning up in their dressing gowns to watch a game of footy just to be warm. I suspect you are going to need a stadium with a roof on it just to keep it free of the elements. Now, that adds $100 million to the stadium investment for starters. I suspect you're going to need a stadium that holds 25,000 people. Now, the other problem with that is that one of the problems in Tasmania is that there's two cities that claim to be the homes of footy in Tasmania. And if you're going to make that sort of stadium infrastructure in Hobart, you've pretty much got to commit to play 11 games in Hobart for the stadium content, which means what happens to Launceston and how do they feel about it? They might say to Hawthorn, well, you keep coming.
Yeah.
And maybe that happens as well. So that all these things are complications for Tasmania.
And the other factor is until the Suns, the Giants have made a grand final, but until the Gold Coast Suns are really well established and can essentially find success on a regular basis and win a flag maybe, we need to bear that in mind. Those two clubs are still a real work in progress.
So the crowd at the Gold Coast North Melbourne game, and if we're talking anti-blockbusters, that is a anti-blockbuster at the
yes.
moment. I think it was about 6,000 at Metricon earlier in the year. So there's a lot of work to do there. And I think there was a similar crowd at GWS's game against St Kilda, which was obviously wet. So that was a factor in that. But certainly there's a lot of work to do, and I think we're a fair way from 20-team competition.
I think 18, sit, bet it in for longer, and let's revisit it in a decade from now.
And Skeet, if there is a third team in WA after we've retired, Chairman Mark Reddings, I'll be your deputy chairman, Mark Duffield, and we'll see if we can make some ground on the competition.
I'll tell you what, that'd be a hard gig in a town like Perth to try and play catch-up with West Coast and Fremantle after all these years.
Well, Fremantle has found how hard it is to play catch-up with West Coast. So the third team is coming from behind Fremantle. So, yeah, very difficult.
Don't want to be the third wheel.
No, exactly. All right. Moving on to everybody's favourite segment, and it's a big hello, Newman.
When you control the mail, you control information.
Josh's mailbag.
Skeet, fantastic to have you here, as always. Thank you for filling in. But it's not just me that's thankful. It seems like you've got an admirer on the mailbag.
Okay, where's this heading? Because I know I'll end up looking like a goose through some form. But, yeah, no, throw it at me.
Caleb from Broome, all the way in Broome.
Yeah,
sure. Me as a man who likes Broome. Just wondering if Mark Reddings has his own podcast or is on any other of them. Been a great addition while quarters is away, and I'm a big fan. Wow.
Well, I've got to say, Carl, I've always thought your work, whatever you do in Broome, has been pretty good yourself. thank you so much for that. No, it's good fun. I mean, you work with people you like and respect and all that.
Oh, thanks a lot.
It comes, and we're talking just like we're sitting at a restaurant or a bar, aren't we, just about footy and trying to give some informed opinion. And, yeah, it's appreciated that sort of feedback, Caleb. Thank you very much, and I hope to get up to Broome in the near future.
Shall we all sit in the circle and sing Kumbaya now?
Oh, yeah, I love that. I don't know that sting pre-made, unfortunately. Damien also emailing in. Damien, love the pod, guys. And I did hit back Damien on his stat in this one. He hasn't hit me back, but I love the question regardless. From perspective, I am a Crow supporter living in Adelaide. Can you let Quarters and Duff know that there's 2,400 kids that have been through the Swans AFL Academy for only 12 to play? And although it does seem like a great return, there are a lot of kids going through. The Swans have identified and butter talent, not simply stake to claim on it. What do you say with that?
We know why they do it. Mm. And the 2,400 is just as important as the 12. So we know why they do it. But they are playing in a competition where they get those 12 and six of them are guns.
Mm.
And that's the problem, is that, if you looked at all the teams that go to, or you looked at all the young kids that go to coaching clinics for West Coast and Fremantle, you'd have 2,400 in a season, let alone over the life of a club. But they don't get exclusive access to those kids, whereas the Swans get the inside run. And people keep on trying to change the subject here. The issue is the talent that makes it onto the field for the Sydney Swans. We know it's good for football. We know it should be done. We're not saying it shouldn't be done. But it is an issue for the rest of the competition. If a club gets the inside run on Heaney, Mills, Blakey, Goulden, Campbell and Sam Wicks as well.
It's the most populated pocket of the earth, of Australia as well. So I think people forget that, even though it isn't the number one AFL area. There's a lot of heads running through it.
Yeah, it's a good argument from Duff, but it's also counterbalanced by the need to keep the Sydney Swans, the Giants and those northern states with, that extra advantage and how big that advantage is.
I'm not anti the academy. I just want it acknowledged. This is a big advantage. You know, it's a big, big advantage. So do we need to look at some things that help counteract that advantage? Because as soon as the NGA Academy started producing a few players that were top-end talent, so Liam Henry was top 10, I think Jamara Ugel-Hagen was, the top pick in the draft, the AFL moved to water it down.
Yeah.
And basically took the top 20 picks out of the academy system. So, Campbell was a top 5 pick. Mills was a top 5 pick. Heaney was a top 20 pick and probably should have been a top 10 pick. It was probably Sydney's position on the ladder that enabled them to take him so low.
Thank you very much for the email, Damien. Adam from Perth, can you guys please explain the reason why they have changed the requirements for team selection to 24 hours out of game day as opposed to Thursday night prior to the COVID period? And Friday for Sunday games. I can't seem to find an explanation right in front of me online.
What they try to do, Duff, I think you'll agree, is the AFL's worked out last year, this is how they operated. They feel maybe they get a better run in the media and keep the cycle going for longer in the lead up to matches. I personally, and we've discussed this, I personally prefer the Thursday night, the old style. Then you can nut it out from there. But I'm assuming the AFL believes they're getting a better run in the media by drip-feeding these matches, the squads, through the course of, Wednesday through to Saturday night.
They probably get 9 team stories over the course of the weekend, whereas before they probably got 2 plus a wrap.
So you think it's entirely exposure-driven?
No, it was done for COVID.
Yes, originally.
That's why. But they've probably looked at it and gone, well, this is actually going all right for us so let's keep it going. I mean, I'm with you. I like Thursday night teams, that works for me, but the AFL rules the world.
Thanks so much for the
cheers for fears.
They need to start working on a Middle East peace solution, I think, the AFL.
Well, they'll send Gill over there. we won't go into that.
with Eddie. How would Eddie go with
it? He keeps telling Palestinians and Israelis to sit down and shut up and listen. I don't know if it'll go too well. Chris from Mount Hawthorn, thanks for the emails, because we had so many this week. We have run a little bit late, so we'll probably get two or three more. Chris from Mount Hawthorn, I'm interested to know the role of schools play when it comes to important homework period when clubs are sifting through their choices for the AFL draft. The Eagles and Dockers took risks with Darling and Fife respectively based on their school reports. They were late maturers and growing up stakes. I'm freshly retired, rather, from school. Heath Chapman recently graduated from. From a young man point of view, I know the Dockers have got themselves a beauty in Heath. What weight did the clubs put into school reports and, I guess, academic, and what are the reports from teachers and stuff and the coaches when they're making the decision?
Wouldn't be the academic record as such, but it would be the kid's character. I've got no doubt they talk to teachers about his character, about his work ethic.
Good citizens, and that's what they like to get. Just, you don't have to be the smartest kid on the block, but if you've got your parents, you can get a sense of what the family is like. And that doesn't mean that if a player's got talent and he's got family issues that you're going to shy away. But if it's a line ball between a Mark Duffield, who has got a pretty sound background and good character, against another similarly talented young player with issues, and if you've got the choice of the two, then it's a no-brainer, I suppose. And
unless you're a superstar, in which case all you need to do is be able to walk and chew gum simultaneously and you'll get a gig at an AFL club.
You got an F in art. No, we'll probably still take it. Ballow of South Perth. G'day, Duff and Quarters and Ratings. A leading indicator in Freo games is whether they have come to play is their missed tackle counts and their intensity when they haven't got the peel. This was very evident in the first half against the Blues. Do you think that this is a psychological, mental, or an attitude occurrence, as slow starts kill teams, especially in away games?
Good call. Really good call. Probably killed Port Adelaide against West Coast as well. Missed tackles, it's not how many you lay, it's how many you miss. Because sometimes the game won't be conducive to a high tackle count. And we've seen that a few times this year with the ball constantly in motion. But if players are getting out of your tackles and still being able to feed the ball to your opposition, remember that a player has committed to make the tackle, so therefore that's one less player you have in a position to defend. So there's a great onus on the bloke that makes the tackle to make it an effective tackle and affect the disposal.
And what it does is you can tell in the first 5 to 10 minutes quite often for a travelling team, it's their attitude, it's their intent. And as we've seen with a couple of times with Fremantle, not quite there.
I didn't think Fremantle were too bad before quarter time, though. It was that 15-minute burst in the second quarter where the Blues just split them open and there was precious little in resistance.
Yeah.
From Fremantle. So Fremantle were an interesting one last weekend in that they started okay and then got blown off the park, and it kind of came out of nowhere.
Just further to that, and I guess this is the never-ending question, if you could buy confidence, then you'd be buying it by the truckload, but how do you fix something like that?
Well, as Ross Lyon used to say, you can't just go down the shop and buy confidence.
I miss those press conferences.
Look, you have to perform. Then performance creates belief. Belief becomes confidence. And eventually, if you do it for long enough, confidence becomes hubris and overconfidence.
Yeah, and experience doesn't hurt in that basis as well. The longer, more games that some of these young sides get into them, they feel as if they belong. They don't look over their shoulder as much with regards to selection. So there's a whole range of issues that come together for that confidence factor. And it's funny, you know, it's amazing, but even in 2021, with all the psychologists involved with footy, I can guarantee you the confidence level of the Dockers walking out on Sunday or running out on Sunday at Optus Stadium is going to be far higher than it was at interstate venue.
Yeah.
It's just human nature, and that's what psychologists are trying to tap into constantly.
Very final, quick one. Richard from Perth, we already somewhat answered one of his questions. When are we going to get a live podcast, guys, live audience podcast?
We'll talk to the powers that be, people that are paid a lot more than us to make these decisions. And, I reckon that'd be fantastic.
I thought we were live, so there you go. It's and me thought I was turned up and started talking, and thought that as they say, once that microphone says red, then you're just talking and you're there. So make sure you don't say anything untoward.
If someone is connected to a pub that or a venue that wants to sponsor it, reach out, okay? Thank you for everyone that emailed in. We're back Tuesday and Thursday. Thank you guys for also answering.
Pleasure.
Good on you, Josh. Good on you, Skeet. Thank you for joining us today. We've been brought to you by TabTouch. Get closer to the AFL action with TabTouch. Please gamble responsibly and call the Gambler's Helpline on 1-800-858-858 if you run into any difficulties. We hope we've tipped you a winner. We hope your team goes well, and we hope to have you back on board on Tuesday when we run the ruler over the results of the weekend.
If you're a fan of the podcast, why don't you send a message to Josh's mailbag? Have you figured out how to fix footy? Are you trying to settle a debate with a mate? Or maybe you just want two of Australia's most experienced footy journalists to turn their attention to an AFL issue of the week. Send to the mailbag at josh.garlep, that's G-A-R-L-E-P-P, at wanews.com.au. And also remember to like, subscribe, and of course, tell your mates so we can make this as big and as good as possible. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast.